call this meeting to order. We do have a quorum, so do I have a member that would like to make a motion on the minutes from April 7th?
Mr. Chair, I am in the process of reviewing the minutes. They look fine, and I would move their approval.
We will take your word for it. Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Any objections, any typos on the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes on April 7th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Minutes are approved. First on the dock today, we have Representative Kurt Dout with House File 1405. Representative Dout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Maybe before I do the little introduction on the bill, I've got an author's amendment to just get it in the shape that we want it in. And I believe it's coded A1.
Go ahead, Representative Dout. And
so I would move the A1 amendment.
Representative Dout moves the A1 amendment. Members, any questions to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 for getting in the shape the author desires, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The A1 is adopted. Representative Dout, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a bill that would allow in instances where you've got electronic devices that are insured, where we've got, when they handle the claims for these devices, our law requires that everybody that answers the telephone, this is your cell phone, that kind of thing, everybody that answers the telephone on the other end of the line needs to have a license, insurance license in the state of Minnesota. So this would basically allow us to have an automated system that would process those claims and that 25 people could be supervised by one licensed person. So, and I've also got Pete Thrain here who would also talk about the bill.
Please state your name for the record, sir, and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Peter Thrain with Leonard Street & Diner. On behalf of Assurion Protective, which is the nation's leading provider of portable electronics insurance, or more commonly known as mobile telephone insurance, the insurance that you buy to cover your electronic devices. House File 1405 amends the state insurance adjuster law to provide an exemption to allow adjusting of claims arising under policies of insurance covering mobile telephones. Just by way of background, you may recall that last session, in legislation authored by Representative Lilly, a bill was passed authorizing the sale of portable electronics insurance or mobile telephone insurance at the point of sale, the place you buy your telephones, or to Verizon or a T-Mobile office. The person who sells you the insurance, sells you the phone, could also sell you the insurance. And that law was enacted because our insurance regulation tends to be based on a pretty traditional model. And some of the sale of these unique and unusual products, limited products, require a little different measure of regulation. And so last session's legislation, after implementation by the Department of Commerce, now allows consumers to buy insurance covering mobile telephones at the point of sale. Now, House File 1405 deals with the other side of that equation, and that is the handling of claims arising under policies of mobile telephone insurance. Today, it's not clear, but it appears as though folks that are handling those claims, there's an argument that they would need to be licensed as adjusters. And the adjuster licensing law in Minnesota exists for folks that don't work for insurance companies but handle claims. And many of these claims are complex and they have valuation questions and differing coverage questions. Folks that handle claims arising under policies of portable electronics insurance, really very, very simple process. And the process involves a telephone claim adjustment, calling a person who's sitting in an automatic terminal, and that person enters in four or five pieces of information, and the computer then adjusts the claim, and within a couple days, you get a replacement telephone. As a consequence, the insurance law really doesn't address this. And so what House File 1405 does is it creates another exemption in the insurance adjuster licensing law. We currently have 13, and it allows folks that adjust losses on these policies of portable electronics insurance not to be licensed. But there are three key consumer protections. Number one, the automatic system that sort of considers whether or not the claim is that pay the claim must be certified as compliant with Minnesota law by an officer of the company that handles the adjustment. Number two, any exempt customer service representatives that handles this adjustment must be supervised by a licensed adjuster or a person that's a licensed producer that is exempt from licensing under Minnesota law. And the officers and executives of the business entity that handles the adjustment of these losses must be subject to the same criminal background checks and investigations as natural persons licensees. And with this sort of consumer protection, we think there's a nice balance to protect and provide a commensurate level of regulation consistent with the level of risk presented by folks that essentially are answering the telephone, entering a few pieces of data, and providing fulfillment for mobile telephones. We have spent some considerable time dialoguing with the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I can tell you at this point, they don't agree with all the provisions of this bill. We worked with them carefully last session on the legislation to deal with the licensing of producers. We would look forward to continuing working with them and try and resolve any concerns they have. With that, Mr. Chairman, we'd appreciate your support of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Thrain. Members, any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, any questions to the bill? Is there anyone? Yes, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, you said that Commerce had some questions on it. Could you elaborate on what Commerce's questions were? Is there, Representative Dowd, is there going to be a testifier from Commerce this afternoon?
Not that I'm aware of, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe I'll let Mr. Chairman, Representative-elect, Mr. Reich testify.
It's like Mr. Reich is approaching the table. Mr. Reich, if you could just introduce yourself for the record and proceed, that'd be great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, John Reich from Minnesota Department of Commerce. We, as Mr. Thrain indicated, we had a good discussion this morning, and I know that Mr. Commodore, who's the Director of Insurance at the department, and Mr. Thrain have been in touch over the last couple of days. There are still a couple of outstanding issues, but I'd like Mr. Commodore to address them, as I know that he will be better at explaining those.
Thank you, Mr. Reich. If you would, sir, please come to the table, identify yourself, and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Commodore with the Minnesota Department of Commerce. As Mr. Thrain indicated, we have been working on this. We did work with him last year, and we were able to come to a resolution. On this particular bill, we have some concerns with some of the concepts that are being introduced by this bill. A prime concern is the automated claims processing that would take place under this bill. We certainly understand that with the cell phone and the portable electronics, that it's a very simple claims process, and what they have here now will be a script that anybody can read, and then the computer basically makes the decision on whether the claim is paid or not. We're not comfortable with that concept. We talked with some of the other state regulators, and they too are not comfortable, although to their credit, this bill has been passed in a number of other states. We've also pointed out to Mr. Thrain that we think under the arrangement that exists for this company that this bill is provided or benefiting, that there's existing state law that would exempt them from having to be licensed, and we've indicated that that's our position, and again, so we don't feel that this bill is necessary. The original bill also introduced some foreign adjusters from another country, and we were not comfortable with that being introduced at this time into the state.
Thank you, Mr. Commodore, for your
again, test. we would be willing to work with them and find any compromise that's possible.
Thank you, Mr. Commodore. Appreciate that. Mr. Thrain, did you have any follow-up comments?
Just very quickly, yes. We've worked constructively with the department. We look forward to continue doing so. The one thing I will mention is that this is being considered in 14 other states. In all of those other circumstances, we've worked constructively with regulators to resolve their concerns. In many cases, it's been in department legislation. So we look forward to continue working with the department to address their concerns here as well.
Thank you, Mr. Thrain. Again, any questions for any of the testifiers? Is there Representative Johnson?
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly, what is the point to the all the extensive background information on section 4 and 5 that's requested? What's the origin of that?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson, that's one of the three consumer protections we've added. Currently, that information is required of natural person adjuster licensees, and we thought as an additional measure of protection, it would be helpful to add that same information for the business entity that's licensed to adjust the claims. And it is in current law for natural person adjusters.
Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Dowd, do you have any closing statements? If not, go ahead and renew your motion.
Support. That's it.
Representative Dowd renews his motion that House File 1405 be passed as amended to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is, the bill is passed. Next on the agenda is House File 1134 with Chairman Hoppe. Chairman Hoppe, through your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 1134 be recommended to pass and sent on to the General Register. And we do have two amendments to the bill.
Which one would you like to move first?
Well, we can either put the amendments on or quickly explain the bill first.
I'll defer to you.
Ms. Rowan says we should put the A5 amendment on first. Okay. So I would move the A5 amendment. And I have Ms. Rowan here that can explain what we're doing and why with the bill and with the amendments.
Ms. Rowan, if you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Robin Rowan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council. House File 1134 is a new National Association of Insurance Commissioners model that's designed to help ensure that when a consumer purchases an annuity, they are purchasing an annuity that is appropriate for their particular financial circumstances. And it does this in primarily three ways. First, it requires insurers to make sure that the sale of the annuity is suitable. Current Minnesota law allows the insurance company to rely on the agent's recommendation. Under this model, we can't do that. The insurers have to take a second look at it and make their own determination. Two, it provides objective and specific criteria that must be used to determine if a product is appropriate or suitable. And again, Minnesota law does not currently do that. Three, it enhances agent training on annuity products. We've been working with the DOC on this, Department of Commerce on this model. They've suggested several deviations from the national model, which we've addressed. They have one additional change that they gave to us late last week that we have concerns with. We're talking about that still. I've actually been asked several times why we are in favor of putting an extra layer of regulation on the way that we do business, and there's two reasons for our wanting to do that. The first is that Minnesota is actually behind the curve in terms of suitability regulation. 42 states have more stringent or more robust requirements than we do, and we think it's time we caught up. Two, Chairman Davids isn't here, but the SEC has tried to take over the regulation of fixed annuities from the states. And as part of the Dodd-Frank bill, they created a safe harbor from the SEC for states that adopt this suitability model. So once again, it's a test of whether the states can adequately regulate insurance, and so we want to show them that, yes, we can meaningfully regulate insurance and do it in a uniform manner, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I suppose this question is probably not for Representative Hoppe.
Representative Mullery, you might be surprised.
Okay, then I'll... how does this differ from the NCOIL approach? And I, as you probably know then, since you have the history of this, I introduced the bill last year, the model from the NCOIL approach. and the department opposed it. And so I'm wondering how this differs, and where is the department, why have they changed, or how have they changed their position from from last year on that approach, and why is this one okay, I guess? And I have a little concern also if we're only doing this to escape federal regulations. Are we really doing a strong consumer protection one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mullery. Good questions. And we believe in states' rights, especially Minnesota's rights. I don't know how this is. I have read some of the NCOIL information. I don't know exactly how this, if this is similar. I don't know what your bill did last year. The Department, Commerce is different this year, so I don't know what their concerns were. This legislation is not from NCOIL, it's from the NAIC.
I know.
And a bunch of different states have done it, and it might, in 19 states by the end of 2011. And it's my understanding that the ones that haven't adopted it this year, most of the rest of them are going to be looking at it next year.
Mr. Rowan, anything to add?
I understand it's from the two competing. The other one is quite often, as a legislator, I look to the legislative one, the NCOIL one. And aren't there, I think, just as many that have adopted the NCOIL? There aren't?
No.
Ms. Rowan?
I thought there was around that.
Feel free to come down and have the number.
If there's someone in the audience that has an answer, we'd appreciate it. If you could just introduce yourself.
But it's my understanding that...
Why don't you speak into the thing?
Ms. Rowan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, I feel like that show when I get to call a friend. We're not aware of an NCOIL suitability model, number one. We're not aware of one. Number two, the Dodd-Frank exemption doesn't apply to the NCOIL model, and we want to keep annuities regulated at the state level. But that's not the only reason why. I stated two reasons why we're interested in passing this, and the first one is that we don't have very stringent suitability regulation here now, and this is a tremendous step up and puts us at the forefront where we should be.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mullery, we have...
Mr. Chair, could we actually have the organ grinder rather than the monkey at the microphone?
Mr. Chair, just call me a monkey.
That's an old one on the Bill Schreiber.
We're just going to ignore that last comment.
You are wise, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Hoppe.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Mullery, I am not familiar. We don't have anyone here. We don't think there's any NCOIL legislation out there. I took a look and wasn't aware of it. Maybe Representative Atkins knows.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, the big dork that I am, I've tracked NCOIL. I believe NCOIL, I think you're right, they have had discussions relative to this issue. I'm not aware of their recommending or passing legislation anywhere in the country, but the NAIC model has been, it's probably more states now than it was the last time I checked, but that is the one that's rolling across the country. It's described as more comprehensive. And I'm trying to recall exactly what the consumer groups were saying, but more comprehensive and a clearer and higher standard. The point with not wanting the feds is actually, or the federal oversight, isn't a matter of trying to avoid further oversight. It's that the feds are trying to take over the oversight of these products altogether and push the states out. And most of us believe, including members of the industry here in Minnesota, that we are better off having it regulated at the state level, that consumers will be better protected, and that the good players among the Minnesota actors will actually have their reputations preserved, because there will be better enforcement of existing laws and avoidance of the bad actors that give the good actors a bad name. So it's not a matter of trying to avoid further regulation or greater regulation. It's trying to have the best regulation available. Those three, I think, were the two points that you raised, and they're very good ones.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mueller.
I totally agree that we should be regulating this and not the Fed, so I don't have any disagreement on that. I was just wondering between the two approaches.
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, you define like the suitability information, and they're on like on bottom of page 3 of the bill. But just gives like the categories of age, annual income. But are there actual specifics? Who determines how you measure those and into the mix? Is it some board or I mean, I certainly hope we don't have to figure this out. So who determines that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stensrud, each company would determine for their own products what would be a suitable what would be suitable under the various categories. And it's suitability is so individually driven. It has to do with the individual consumer, what's suitable for them. So you wouldn't want anything more specific in the law. And then, of course, when the Department of Commerce enforces it, they're the ultimate deciders of what, you know, if the company's determination is right as to what is suitable.
Any other members' questions on the A5? If not, I'll say let's move to adoption then. All in favor of the A5, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted. Representative Hoppenard, do you want to move on to the A2, or are you going to continue on?
No, let's move on to the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair. And again, I'll have Ms. Rowan explain why we're here with... Well, actually, I'm offering that on behalf of... And you. Okay, this is something that... No. Don't leave. You can't leave me. You're the monkey. No, we scratched that from the record. This is a provision that I don't think there's any objection to, and this was, if you want to come down and explain it, here, I'll slide over one.
Mr. Franzen, if you would please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Doug Franzen, representing Allstate Insurance. This is a simple amendment that I believe has been vetted by everyone, including Commerce, and no one has any objection to it. It simply brings Minnesota in line with the rest of the country, where right now this amendment would permit a rider for a critical injury or critical illness, excuse me, rider to a life insurance policy. It simply permits the combination of coverages. As I said before, 48 states permit these coverages to be combined. The 49th is the state of Virginia, which both houses of the legislature has passed it. It is pending on the governor's desk, and actually it may be law in 49 states now. Minnesota, this simply would bring Minnesota in conformity with the other 49 states.
Thank you, Mr. Franzen. Any questions? If not, all in favor of the A2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Hoppe, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. That's it. If anybody has any further questions, we'd be happy to take them. Otherwise, we'd appreciate your support.
Any questions from any of the members? I see Mr. Reich making his way back down. Mr. Reich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Reich, Department of Commerce. I just wanted to be on the record to say that at this point we have been working very well with Ms. Rowan and MFC and the folks who are advocating for this bill. We've had a number of issues that they've been willing to address. We still have a couple of outstanding issues, and we're looking forward to continuing to work with them as we move forward. We understand the legislative timeline is getting tight, and so we'll continue to work, especially with the break coming up. Just want to be on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reich. We appreciate your testimony. With that, Representative Hoppe renews his motion that House File 1134, as amended, be passed and placed on the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Bill is passed as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next up, Chairman Hoppe, 1174.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I will move House File 1174 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Representative Atkins omnibus liquor bill. And like a lot of these liquor bills, this is a very simple, very straightforward, common sense, I think, bill that will, or part of the omnibus liquor bill that will leave people saying, why didn't we do this before? essentially what we're doing is under current Minnesota state law, a municipality can't issue a liquor license to a university or nonprofit within its jurisdiction. We're just changing law to say that they can. They still have the say in it. This is not saying they have to. It's just giving them the ability to say yes so they don't have to come to the legislature all the time and ask us if it's okay, and I can turn it over to the expert.
Thank you, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Scott McMahon. I'm the Director of Government and Community Affairs of the Minnesota Private College Council. We represent the 17 nonprofit liberal arts colleges and universities across the state, schools like St. Thomas, Carleton, McAllister, St. Olaf, and St. John's, St. Ben's, and those types of schools. Under current Minnesota statute, the state of Minnesota has granted authority to municipalities to issue liquor licenses to institutions such as hotels, restaurants, bowling centers, clubs and veterans organizations, and certain sports facilities. They've also granted special authority to the municipalities for things such as theaters, museums, the Elko Speedway, golf courses, and a number of other instances such as that. Over the past 2 years, the legislature has granted authority to the city of Minneapolis to issue liquor licenses to the two private colleges that exist within its jurisdiction, Augsburg College and St. Thomas University's Minneapolis campus. What this bill would do, as Representative Hoppe had explained, is basically grant municipalities across the state who have our colleges within their jurisdictions the authority to issue, if they so choose, a liquor license to the college university that exists within their jurisdiction. The municipality would maintain the right, first off, to deny the issuance of that liquor license if they so chose to do so, and secondly, to put on any sort of conditions that the city or the community may desire for there to be in that situation. The critical thing here is frankly, it allows the conversation for the community to decide what the best situation is between the college, the community, and the city government. I am also joined today by Doug Hennis from the University of St. Thomas to talk a little bit about what this means from an institution standpoint.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Doug Hennis. I'm Vice President for University and Government Relations at St. Thomas. A year ago, the legislature did approve language that would and legislation that would allow St. Thomas to pursue a liquor license for its Minneapolis campus, and we subsequently did that and now have that license, and we're pursuing that same legislation this session for our St. Paul campus. We've found in running events, our own events or events from outside groups that may lease space from us, that it is more efficient and much less expensive if we have our own liquor license than if we have to contract that type of thing out. So it's a better situation all around if we have the actual license.
Thank you, Mr. Hennis. Do you have any questions from any of the members? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and perhaps for the gentleman from St. Thomas. So how is it that St. Thomas is using this now? Do you have like your own, like a pub on campus for students, or how do you utilize the liquor license?
Representative, no pub on the Minneapolis campus, and there would be no plans to open a bar on the St. Paul campus either. So typically, two kinds of events that you could have, if for example, you have an alumni reunion or a donor's dinner or something like that, to which you either people have to pay a fee, or if you sell a ticket to get a glass of wine, for example, you need a license. So the legislation and ultimately getting a license from the city allows us to go ahead and to complete that kind of transaction. Another example would be if a outside group comes in and wants to lease your facilities for a conference, a seminar, even a wedding reception. Again, having the license allows you to go ahead and to expedite that process.
Representative Loon.
Thank you. So just so I'm clear, so this is this a permanent license for, sounds like intermittent events, or it's basically permission for what might be intermittent events that you're envisioning?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loon, it's not permanent. It's only giving cities the permanent right to make this decision. So, and it wouldn't be where St. Thomas or none of the other schools are going to open up a permanent bar or pub. They're just for catering events. Essentially, it's, as was already explained, it's rather than using a caterer's license, they would have their own license. So if we wanted to have a, all of us wanted to go to the University of St. Thomas and have a gathering, we could, they could use an, their liquor license if the city of St. Paul decided it was okay for them to have one.
Representative, one thing worth adding is that the city would renew the license on an annual basis, so if there were any issues, you know, they could be addressed at that time. So it's not a permanent license, it's a it's an annual license.
Right, any follow-up, Representative Loon?
No, thank you.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whoever, does this, or do we already have it at Minskew, or, because I've been at foundation meetings at Minskew campuses, and they always have a caterer and use that license of the caterer. So you, is this already, the university I know has like the, whatever, Kauffman Union can do it. Do we have one already for Minskew, or why not if we don't?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mullery, this bill would not apply to Minskew. It would only be private colleges, and I don't think Minskew does have this same kind of legislation in place. They might have individual licenses granted by individual cities, but then they would have to come to the legislature and ask for a specific license for a specific city and a specific Minskew facility.
Representative Mullery.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Representative, or Chair Hoppe, too. Wouldn't it be good for the Minskew foundations for each college there to also have this so they don't have to do that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mullery, I don't want to speak for the private colleges, but I think yes. And if they want to do it, you know, certainly makes sense to me. It's, I think it simplifies things so then they don't have to go to the city and then come to the legislature for a specific rider or license.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is to the testifiers. So would the intent of this be for everybody, or would it be perhaps the wealthier guests at the colleges?
Representative Hoppe.
Pass, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, the intention is that is that this would make things an easier process for the campus to handle. For those attending the events, alumni, donors, whatever, they'd have access to the situations. Our overall intention is this is not focused at students. That's the only group that we're probably discriminating against, other than maybe like a senior dinner as their farewell upon graduation. But it really is focused at a greater community events going on around the campuses and things that are hosted at our campuses, wedding receptions, community gatherings, and such.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. And
Representative Lilly.
Say hypothetically you had a football game perhaps at St. Thomas, and you wanted to offer a beverage. Would that be available to everybody or the donors?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, hypothetically, should St. Thomas have a football team? wasn't that his question? Did I misunderstand?
St. John's, then.
Representative Lilly, no. There would not be alcohol served at the game, and it wouldn't be available to the students in any section of the game. At wonderful O'Shaughnessy Stadium field.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I might add hypothetically. Based on experience last fall at St. John's, we won't say who won the game, but I'm not sure if alcoholic beverages were available at that game. But no, there'd be
we're
no
afterwards.
There'd be no sales during the game in the stadium. Now, there may be a gathering out on a plaza or something like that where one could obtain a beer.
Mr. Chair, and I'm just hoping that it would be available to everybody, yeah, that you would and of drinking age, legal age, and that would be the direction. And also, is there any, Chair Hoppe, on a lighter note, is there any way to include Luther? It's in just right across the board in Decorah. And
this is going to be a lighter note? Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Lilly, I think maybe we should put something in the bill that says only in facilities of 35 or 40,000 seats or higher would we need to worry about this. So that wouldn't apply to any of the schools in this bill.
All right, to get us back on track, Representative Atkins.
Well, hypothetically. Actually, the way that Johnny's been getting manhandled by the Tommies, maybe we should allow those.
They've lost once in the last 20 years. I don't think that's manhandling.
Who was that? I'm just
football.
My memory's shorter, but Mr. Hennis, it's nice to see you. The last time I was, or when I was a student at St. Thomas, my hair was dark, and you had more. you look good. My question really, I think historically the reason why we haven't done it this way is because we've had occasionally neighborhoods that there've been friction between the neighborhoods and the college campuses, and my friends at St. Thomas, I think, were the poster child for that friction 25, 30 years ago. And my sense now, though, is we've seen a sea change, where there does seem to be a very good relationship between the campus and the neighborhood. But my question, Mr. Hennis, maybe hopefully reflective of other campuses, are you aware of any pushback from some of the neighbors around the campuses? I'm assuming the chair will ask if there's anybody here to testify against the bill. I haven't heard from anybody in opposition to it, and I think that's a good sign. 10 years ago, I probably would have. Not to point a finger at St. Thomas, but there were a number of campuses that had struggles with their own neighbors, and if we were going to make it easier for them to get a liquor license, I think we would have had possibly a room full of people sitting here saying that that's not a good idea. So, Mr. Hennis or Mr. McMahon, maybe you guys can, has it changed?
Mr. Hennis?
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, we actually did take this to our Neighborhood Advisory Committee a year ago, and there were some concerns expressed, not by Advisory Committee members, but other neighbors as to what this really meant, would it have any impact on the neighborhood and the like. So at Representative Murphy's suggestion, we pulled the St. Paul campus out of the bill a year ago and just let the Minneapolis campus in. Subsequently, we've had conversations with our advisory committee. Representative Murphy did sit in on one of those, and the advisory committee is comfortable with the language that's been proposed as part of the this bill, and voted unanimously to support that in February, with the understanding that St. Thomas will sit down and in good faith negotiate any conditions with the city license. So, for example, locations, hours, no bar on campus, that kind of thing. So I would say it's safe to say that we do have the support of the neighborhood and, in particular, our advisory committee.
Chair Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins. Even last year, Representative Murphy had the bill that would have done substantially this, and I was a co-author on that, and I got a bunch of phone calls on that, and she did pull out the St. Paul part of it, and I haven't heard from anybody on this bill this year. I'm not aware of anybody. I think the university has done a very good job in working with the city and advisory group. So, as far as we know, there is peace in the valley.
Representative Atkins.
And it's meaningful to me, Mr. Chair, that Representative Murphy is a co-author of this. So I think if there was not peace in the valley, she would not have been a willing co-author on the. Mr. McMahon, any other situations across the state where we're going to. What I always fear is we pass something and then in August we hear from folks that said we never told them, they didn't know, and we did the worst thing in the whole world. Is that going to happen to us?
Mr. McMahon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, to our understanding, there are no other communities within the communities in which we have campuses that this is a concern. We have 17 schools within our association. We kind of have three different chunks of schools within there. Those that have said that if this legislation is approved, we'll move forward and talk with their municipality once they have that authority. A chunk that say, you know, it's intriguing, but it's not what we're looking at right now. And then a chunk that don't deal with any sort of alcohol-based events on their campuses. So, you know, out of that 17, we're dealing with a smaller segment as well. We don't know of any concerns, and you know, I think the key thing about this legislation is that it allows the conversation to happen at the municipal level, where it's probably more appropriate for the city council to figure out, as Mr. Hennis commented, for the city council to figure out what sort of restrictions or parameters need to be set in order to allow what the school needs to have happen, plus what demands the community might have as well.
Representative Atkins,
thank you. To that, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify in opposition to this House file? Seeing none, Representative Hoppe.
I recommend that we lay this over for possible inclusion, Mr. Chair.
House
Thank
file,
you, Mr. Chair and members.
Yep, House File 1174 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Liquor Bill. Next up is House File 1248, Representative McFarland. Representative McFarland, do we have anyone that would like to move the bill? Representative Anderson moves House File 1248.
Thank you.
To be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative McFarland, to your bill. I see we have an amendment here.
I do, the A1 amendment.
Okay. Would you like to address that now?
Yes.
Representative Anderson moves the A1 amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment brings forward the language that was added in the Senate. This bill was heard last week, and they amended it, and I wanted to make sure everything was the same. So with that, House File 1248 gives White Bear Township the authority to issue on- and off-sale licenses to establishments within their jurisdiction. With me, I have the town clerk, Bill Short, that would like to speak to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please excuse my hoarseness. I'll try to keep my comments brief. As you may know, townships do not have the authority to issue liquor licenses. Therefore, the three restaurants in White Bear Township for which liquor licenses need to be issued have to go through Ramsey County. White Bear Township is the only township in Ramsey County. Therefore, it puts onto Ramsey County a duty which this sort of a local duty that's unusual to them. White Bear Township has we have our own liquor ordinance and process the applications internally, as does Ramsey County. There's a duplication of process there that's become cumbersome for the county and for the applicants and for the township. A comment about White Bear Township. Besides being the only township in Ramsey County, we are by far the largest township in the state. We have a population of approximately 12,000. And coincidentally, we provide municipal services for our neighboring city, the city of Gem Lake. We're able to process their liquor licenses for them, but we can't do it for ourselves. So we'd like to have that authority.
Sir, we missed your name at the front table here. Could you repeat your name, please, for us?
William Short. S-H-O-R-T.
Thank you, Mr. Short. Appreciate that.
And I will continue to tell you that after I got the request from the township, I did go to Ramsey County and asked about their willingness to let the township do this. They brought it forward, and they had a resolution that passed on March 15th that they support this movement. I've also talked to the Minnesota Association of Townships, and they support this for White Bear Township. And my understanding is the Minnesota Liquor and Beverage Association is also fine with this. So, any questions?
Members, are there any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, let's vote on the A1. All in favor of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Discussion to the bill. Any more discussion? Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you aware of any opposition from neighboring communities, cities, townships, anybody that has any problem with it?
No one.
Representative McFarland, Mr. Short.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Atkins, Representative Atkins, none. I've heard no opposition.
Thank you. They have a fine town clerk, by the way, in White Bear Township. He's also a constituent of mine, but he does an exemplary job.
Duly noted. Any further questions or discussion to the bill, members? If not, Representative Anderson renews her motion that House File 1248, as amended, to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Liquor Omnibus Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Next up is House File 1326, Representative Atkins. Representative Atkins, you can proceed when you're ready.
Chair, I will move that House File 1326 be moved to have it laid over for potential inclusion in the Omnibus Liquor Bill. And with that, Mr. Chair and members, this bill, as you probably have figured out already, would remedy a grave injustice that's been perpetrated over the last 153 years of statehood. If you go to a bed and breakfast in Minnesota right now, you can get free Minnesota-made wine, but you can't get free Minnesota-made beer. I have no idea why I'm carrying it. It just seemed like a good vehicle bill. Mr. McCormick gave it to me, and it seemed like a good non-controversial kind of vehicle. That's all the bill does. It will likely, oh, good Lord, here we go again.
Yeah. Did I see the hand go up?
Well, I know it was in several of your campaign flyers, bringing beer to bed and breakfast, so I'm just here to try to help. But I'd be willing to stand for questions on that. You'll see this House File 1326 come back dressed up at the direction and discretion of the chair probably in the next week, 10 days, something like that. With a number of the bills that we're hearing today and tomorrow, and it will become the liquor omnibus bill. With that, I'd be happy to stand for any questions or concerns.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, I just noticed, why do you discriminate against beer? You can only have one beer but two glasses of wine, and then I noticed on wine, it doesn't have to be Minnesota wine, but...
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, thank you. Duly noted. I will keep that in mind and make sure that we address those concerns.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, I was just wondering...
If there's a stadium built.
I was just wondering, hypothetically, if this would be available to all guests staying at the B&B or just... the one staying in perhaps like the wedding suite or...
Representative Atkins, we're awaiting your answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
High-income people.
Yes, Representative Lilly, we intend to make this very egalitarian, available to everyone, and including if you just walk by, we'd hand you one.
The B&B guests of Minnesota appreciate your efforts.
Thank you.
Any other questions or discussion to the bill?
It doesn't say that. Be only
seeing none,
high income.
Representative Atkins renews his motion. The House File 1326 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Liquor Bill.
Thank you.
The final bill before us today is House File 1253. Representative Scott.
Who's got this one?
You want it? Representative Dowd. Yeah.
I would move the bill, 1253.
Thank you, Representative Dowd. Moves House File 1253 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Liquor Omnibus Bill. To that, Representative Scott, your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for hearing this bill. And I understand that we're going to go ahead and move to adopt the Senate languages as a form of an amendment. I don't know, did the members get a copy of that?
Does everyone have the A1 amendment?
All right.
With that, Representative Dowd moves the A1 amendment. Representative Scott to the A1.
Members of the committee and Mr. Chair, this is specifically a bill that would allow farm wineries to have on-sale liquor at county fairs. And the Senate file is specific to that. And what I'd like to do is introduce my constituent, Mark Keaton, who owns White Rabbit Vineyards and Wine. And he's the one that brought this forth to me. So I would just like to have him give a little testimony on the importance of this to him.
Thank you, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mark Hedin, and I am the owner, the grower, the picker, the stopper, the fermenter, the bottler, and the salesperson at White Rabbit Vineyards and Winery in Andover, Minnesota. I'm here to support the House file number 1253 that would allow municipalities to issue the temporary on-sale permit for Minnesota farm wineries at the county fairs. I started making wine in 1988 and became a legal winery in 2007. I am one of Minnesota's smallest wineries. Now, if you were to tour Europe, you would find some huge billion-dollar wineries with thousands of acres of grapes growing across the fields that export to America. But there are also thousands of families with just an acre or two who make their wine to sell locally. They never get exported more than 100 or 200 miles away from their home. Now, these small producers are sometimes called garagistes. White Rabbit is very like these garagistes. I don't have hundreds of acres of grapes. We don't have the climate here in Minnesota to grow Chardonnay or Marquette. I don't have a large tasting room or an old barn to provide atmosphere. I don't have a large marketing budget. Most people who buy White Rabbit wine first tasted it at a friend's house or won a bottle that I donated to one of the local fundraisers, such as Free to Be. In short, it's not easy being a Minnesota farm winery. And like the seeds that you plant in your garden, any nurturing that you can provide will be much appreciated. There are not many opportunities for people to taste a small winery's wine in Minnesota other than going to the winery. To be able to sell a glass of wine to hundreds of people at a local fair would mean much more to the winery than just that glass of wine. People will remember how good it was and tell their friends and neighbors and then come to the winery. Who knows? Maybe as the Minnesota farm winery industry grows, someday you'll be able to enjoy a nice bottle of Minnesota Marquette wine that you just tasted at the county fair last summer. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Members, are there any questions to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, we will vote on the A1. All in favor of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Scott, anything further to your bill as amended?
Nope, I just appreciate your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Members, is there any questions or discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Dowd will renew his motion that House File 1253, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, members, we are adjourned.